From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. North Korea's ceremonial head of state, Kim Jong-nam, will lead a high-level Pyongyang delegation to the Winter Olympic Games this week. Tufts University Korean Studies scholar Sunyoon Lee tells VOA it benefits North Korea in two ways.
Kim Jong-nam's visit to South Korea is part of North Korea's campaign to mesmerize the South Korean public into believing that North Korea means well and to advance its leverage vis-a-vis South Korea and the United States to get its adversaries to gradually de-escalate, back off, and relax prematurely, that is, sanctions against North Korea.
Lee also said it buys time for the North to perfect its weapons of mass destruction program. South Korean announcement came as the joint North-South Korean women's ice hockey team lost to Sweden 3-1. The coach of the joint Korean team, Canadian Sarah Murray, said they had a week to play together.
The North Korean players learn quickly. They've been great to work with. They work really hard. So we've just been reviewing our systems, and we'll keep teaching and keep getting better.
She said Sunday's performance was an improvement over the loss received at the hands of Sweden in July. Senior officials of South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party met with President Jacob Zuma as pressure builds on the 75-year-old leader to step down. Mr. Zuma, dogged by corruption allegations, was replaced as party leader in December by the deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa. Mr. Zuma, whose second term expires next year, is expected to face a new no-confidence vote. This is VOA News. In Cape Town, South Africa, a city of 4 million, 1 million people live in settlements. Many are accused of wasting water, but Dr. Christy Carden of the University of Cape Town says poor people do not waste water at communal taps and are responsible for only a small portion of the total water consumed in the city.
Bearing in mind that we have about a quarter of the population of Cape Town lives in informal settlements. So it's a large population of people that live in areas that are not supplied on an individual basis with water. They have tap stands. And there are always pictures of, you know, running taps and broken fixtures and look at the leakage and all the rest. But the reality is that those 1 million people out of a population of four only use 4.5% of the water.
Cape Town has been struggling for several years with water shortages caused by climate change and huge population growth. City authorities say it might have to turn off most city taps in mid-April if residents do not save enough water. President Trump says a controversial memo alleging the FBI abused its power in probing Russian interference in the 26th presidential election and vindicates him. Meantime, one of the authors of that memo, Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, appeared on CBS's Face the Nation, where he spoke about a dossier reportedly used by the FBI to pursue parts of the investigation into any collusion between Moscow and the Russian in the Trump campaign. He also mentioned alleged meetings between the Trump campaign and a Russian lawyer at the Trump Tower in New York and others who might have been associated with that dossier.
There is a Russia investigation without a dossier. So to the extent the memo deals with the dossier and the FISA process, the dossier has nothing to do with the meeting at Trump Tower. The dossier has nothing to do with an email sent by Cambridge Analytica. The dossier really has nothing to do with George Papadopoulos' meeting in Great Britain. It also doesn't have anything to do with obstruction of justice. So there's going to be a Russia probe even without a dossier.
President Trump also contends there is nothing to investigate because his campaign team never colluded with the Russians. President Trump's call to cut aid for countries where drugs are produced or trafficked could cast a shadow over the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's South America visit from Mexico and Argentina. Mr. Tillerson heads next for the top cocaine-producing nations of Peru and Colombia. Sports news, 52nd annual Super Bowl of American-style football has been played, and guess what? The Philadelphia Eagles defeated the New England Patriots. Final score, 41-33.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, the 5th day of February, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today, Monday, is 1 month since Nigeria abducted Cameroon separatist leaders and also the last day of an ultimatum to Cameroon.
By the end of the day, Monday, February 5th, we will not see evidence of life of our leaders that the Republic of Cameroon can expect to hear from us. And we will go to any length to make sure we see our leaders alive.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. The Cameroon government says 47 separatist leaders arrested are alive and undergoing police interrogation. University of Liberia students want their president out. And tensions remain high in Kenya as the government continues its crackdown on supporters of Raila Odinga.
One of the members of parliament was arrested and held in communicado. However, we have another lawyer, an advocate, Joshua Medina. He was arrested on Friday morning.
Duncan Kayemba is the senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour news and current affairs television channel. The Guineans voted Sunday in municipal elections. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Monday, is 1 month since Nigeria abducted Cameroon separatist leaders and turned them over to the Cameroonian government, which has imprisoned them. Today also marks the last day of an ultimatum given by the separatists for the Cameroonian government to produce their leaders live or face the consequences. Violating the ceasefire, the Ambazonian secessionist movement, as it is called, is seeking independence from French-speaking Cameroon. Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement. He says unless the movement sees its leaders live, it will not be convinced that they are alive.
By end of day Monday, the ultimatum that we give the government of French Cameroon will have come to an end. And we are hoping that the government of Paul Bia will not drag us down the path that we are going to go after tomorrow.
What would you like the government to do for which you are giving the government an ultimatum? What is the end game?
February the 5th marks exactly 1 month since our leaders of the Federal Republic of Ambazonia were abducted in Nigeria by the Nigerian government in collaboration with the Cameroon government and the government of France. We have not set an eye, nor have a phone call, nor have any form of communication with any of our leaders, especially our president. And last week when Issa Chiroma, the line communicator for the Republic of Cameroon, came forward and said they have them, we thought they would show us some video evidence that indeed they have them. They did not. What we are saying is their word that our leaders are alive isn't good enough until we have evidence of a video footage showing them at the airport, showing them in Yaounde. We are not going to be convinced that they are indeed alive. And that is the reason for the ultimatum that we gave them. And so by the end of the day, Monday, February 5th, we will not see evidence of life of our leaders that the Republic of Cameroon can expect to hear from us. And our people are ready. They are prepared. And we will go to any length to make sure we see our leaders alive.
Let me say that the government has said that your leaders are alive and the government does not have to be pressurized by you to produce them. But it says the people of Cameroon should trust the government that your leaders are alive.
Which government do we trust, sir? A government that has killed people they call their citizens? A government that has burned down whole towns and so and whole cities? A government that has killed people in cold blood and buried in mass graves in the same place? Is that a government you want us to trust their word? A government that kills people and call them, turn around and call them terrorists? No, we don't believe in them. We don't believe a single word that proceeds from them. We want video, not photo, video evidence that our leaders are indeed alive.
An ultimatum must have something to back it up. What do you intend to do since today, Monday? And the government has not produced your leaders or has not shown you a video evidence. What do you do?
So we are not necessarily doing anything on Monday, but I can assure you going, forward after Monday that for people to Cameroon will hear from us. If they cannot produce our leaders alive, that is simple. I wouldn't go any further. Because, listen, this government has pushed us to the wall. We asked for federation. They refuse to give it to us. We have asked for dialogue, inclusive dialogue. They refuse to give it to us. And what are they doing? We have our people in their thousands behind bars. We have over 40,000 refugees in Nigeria. And now they have our leaders in their keeping. How far do we have to go before we feed the pain, before we do something? This is the moment, sir.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. The Cameroon government says 47 separatist leaders arrested by Nigeria and turned over to Cameroon are alive and undergoing police interrogation. Information Minister Issa Chiromambakari says Cameroon and Nigeria are two law-abiding countries who respect human rights. He says Cameroon does not bow down to threats.
First of all, I want to confirm that all of them, they are alive and they are doing very well. Cameroon, as well as Nigeria, are two law-abiding nations. All what has taken place in Nigeria as well as in Cameroon has taken place within the framework of the laws governing Nigeria and Cameroon first, and the two nations are signatory of all treaty and conventions dealing with the protection of the human rights. The second aspect of my comment will consist of telling you that right now, the 47 who have been arrested and extradited to Cameroon, all of them, not only they are doing well, they are under investigation, they are into the hand of our police judiciary in full compliance with the law of our nation.
If you say that the 47 Cameroonians are alive and in the custody of your police, why haven't you made them available to the general public?
Well, I don't have to answer your question, why this and why that. I confirm the fact that whatever is taking place is in compliance with rule and regulation in this very moment, in this very situation. No breach of law, no violation of law. Now all of them are under investigation. I'm the spokesperson of the government. In this capacity, I confirm all of them alive, all of them are doing very well, all of them are enjoying all what the laws of our nation give them. So you don't have to be concerned at all as far as their health and life is concerned.
It's just like a cook saying that their food is the best food ever. But let the customers decide whether that food is the best tasting. You have to produce the people and let the general public decide whether, yes, they are in the custody of your government.
We don't answer the threat. If people would like to blackmail our nation, this has never been something that has bothered our mind. I repeat always the same thing. Whatever is taking place as far as the 47 are concerned, is within the framework of law. And once the times arrive, they will have their customers, their lawyers, and they will be ready to say what they want, to plead their case, to produce any kind of document. They will be free to do this. But what I want all of you to know is that compliance with the law, law of nation, international laws that Cameroon is signatory.
So your government is ready to take the consequences of the threat that is being made by the so-called separatist movement?
We are an independent nation. Do you think that it is right, it is logical to threaten an independent nation, victim of terrorism? Do you know the amount of gendarmes who have been assassinated, decapitated, beheaded? Almost 20 have already been killed by secessionists.
Issa Chiromambakari is Cameroon's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, the 5th day of February. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Tensions remain high in Kenya as the government continues its crackdown on supporters of former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, who a week ago was sworn in as the people's president. Yenendo Development, a member of parliament affiliated with Odinga's National Super Alliance, NASA, was quoted as saying Sunday the plans were underway to constitute a cabinet to be led by Odinga. Duncan Kayemba, a senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour television news channel, and one of the stations that has been shut down. He says tensions were heightened further by the arrest of NASA activist Miguna Miguna and reports that he had suffered an asthma attack.
There's a lot of tension in the country because January 30th of the swearing in of NASA leader Raila Odinga as the people's president, one of the members of parliament who is a lawyer who had the robes and presided over the swearing in, was arrested and held incommunicado until Friday and was presented in court, and bail was granted at 50,000 bail. However, we have another lawyer, an advocate, Miguna Miguna, Joshua Miguna Miguna, who was next to the member of parliament as the administrator of that oath, Raila Odinga. He was arrested on Friday morning when police stormed his home in one of the Lipi suburbs. Then they went in by force, damaged the door before they could get hold of him. And he was moved in three different police stations before he was finally taken before a law court that is outside the capital. Now, his supporters within NASA tried to get him out. And the information that we are getting right now is that his whereabouts still remain unknown. Remember that the court granted his lawyers a plea that he be released on bond so that tomorrow he can be availed in court. But that did not happen.
You mentioned this Miguna Miguna. So how true is it then, this report we have here, that he must have suffered an asthma attack?
Yes, that is where we are having the challenge. Remember that nobody can access him. The only person that might have be able to access him is the lawyer. And that lawyer is the one who has posted on his Twitter account. It's called Edwin Sifuna. When you check Edwin Sifuna on Twitter, he said that he's been informed that his client suffered asthma attack, but despite him getting hold of the inhaler, he has not been allowed to give it to him, and the police have refused to allow him into the cell. So that is the information that as late as 5 p.m., that is about 4 hours ago.
Duncan Kayemba is senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour television news channel. He was speaking with me from the capital, Nairobi. Israel is taking steps to deport thousands of African migrants. Reporter Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israeli immigration authorities have begun issuing deportation orders to asylum seekers from war-torn Eritrea and Sudan. It is the latest step in Israel's plan to expel about 40,000 African migrants after they entered the country illegally during the past decade. A man who identified himself as Michael received a deportation notice. It said that by April 1st, he must leave for an unnamed African country reported to be Rwanda. Michael said it is wrong for Israel to deport refugees knowing they face certain death back in Africa. But the Israeli government rejects the refugee claim, saying the vast majority are economic migrants seeking a better quality of life. The deportation order amounts to an ultimatum. The migrants can accept $3,500 and leave voluntarily, or they will face imprisonment. Israeli officials say the Africans are threatening the Jewish character of the state and blame them for rising crime and a deteriorating quality of life in South Tel Aviv. An Israeli who lives in South Tel Aviv, Mai Golan, says the migrants must go.
She
says Jewish residents are afraid to walk the streets where they are harassed and sometimes robbed, raped, or attacked by the Africans. Nevertheless, Israeli human rights activists say the government's policy is illegal under international law and immoral. Parliament member Michal Rozin of the Liberal Opposition Merits Party says Israel is deporting the migrants to an uncertain future in Africa, noting that Rwanda denies that it has agreed to take them in. Critics say Israel has a moral obligation to shelter the Africans, considering the fate of Jewish refugees who were turned away from Western countries during the Holocaust. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Students of the University of Liberia say they will continue their protest until their demands are met. The protest began last Friday, demanding that students who paid their fees be allowed to complete their registration. It is estimated about 8,000 students are affected by University President Ophelia Wicks' alleged refusal to allow the students to complete their registration. Martin Colley, Secretary General of the Student Unification Party, says President Wicks must also resign because she is a visible danger to student interest.
Quite frankly, the position of the students remains unchanged. We have two fundamental demands. Demand number one is for the process to be reopened, for all 8,000 students to be absorbed. Demand number two is for the president of the university to immediately resign because she is a visible danger against students' interests. So those are our two demands. This is why we managed to have had the protest on Friday. It will interest you to know that 8,000 students are yet to register, even though we are going to final exams. It was in October when we started engaging the administration through the office of the president of the University of Liberia to reopen the process. Because at the University of Liberia, the system is not automated. The system is manual. So it takes a longer time for students to complete registration. Unfortunately, the administration of the university only gave 3 weeks to 1 month for over 20,000 students to complete registration, which was impossible.
You are calling for the resignation of the president, Dr. Wicks. What does she have to do with that? You said that she's a danger to the interest of students?
Certainly. Dr. Wicks is the only person insisting that the registration would not reopen. We went to a meeting with Dr. Wicks about 4 days ago, and these were the exact words of Dr. Wicks. Even though 8,000 students are yet to register, I care less if these students do not register. They need to go home and sit because they didn't register within the time frame. More to that, she says she has a doctorate degree, so she doesn't care whether the master's children drop out of school. So the action of Dr. Wicks provoked Friday's demonstration. It can be recalled in November, the Board of Trustees, which is the highest decision-making body of the University of Liberia, mandated Dr. Wicks, who is the president of the university, to reopen the process. Unfortunately, she did not implement the board's decision. She chose to take a unilateral decision not to reopen the process. It will interest you to know, Mr. Boti, that up to now, the University of Liberia does not have a functional website. They do not have an automated electronic data processing center where students go to register. Students have to stay in long lines for hours on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, to carry out registration. So it takes 3 weeks plus for a student to complete registration. Can you imagine? So it is difficult for students of the university to complete registration in time.
Even the president, George Weah, has said that the country is broke. So do you want to blame it on Dr. Wicks, the president, or this is a systemic thing, it's national, that the government must address?
Quite frankly, to a larger extent, Mr. Boti, we can blame it on Dr. Wicks because currently the budget of the university can cater for digitizing the system. We have a budget of $16.1 million. So to automate the system will not cost more than $2 million. So why can't we take action to digitize the system so that we have a smooth operation on a semester basis? Since Dr. Wicks came to the University of Liberia as president, everything has been helter-skelter.
Martin Colley is Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Authorities at the University of Liberia say they plan to meet later today with protesting students to find solutions to the students' demands. The students are demanding more time to register for registration and the resignation of University President Dr. Ophelia Wicks. Dr. Julius Awolo Nelson, Vice President and Dean for Student Affairs, says the administration will present its proposal to the students during today's meeting.
We were able to talk with members of the board who came for an emergency meeting on the University Capitol Hill campus to look at what the situation was and find a way forward. We were blessed to have in the meeting leaders from the current government who participated as guests representing the office of the visitor to the university, which is the current president. And in that meeting, the board endorsed a plan from the administration to have a meeting with the students on tomorrow at 11 a.m., a cross-section of the student leaders from the student government, county association, department-based student association, the student political parties and religious groups, so that we can share a common ground that we can find together to move away from it.
So, Dr. Nelson, the way we understand it is that this problem began with some fees that the students have paid, and it has to do with registration. Can we get clarification on what exactly the situation here?
It's the registration process that started in September. Before then was a pre-registration in the second semester of last academic year. And the actual registration was to go from the September 11 to October 14. Most of the students who were billed could not complete the registration process by the end of the registration that was extended by October 31st.
Dr. Julius Awolo-Nelson is Vice President and Dean for Student Affairs at the University of Liberia, speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the African Nations Championship, CHAN 2018, where Morocco became the first host nation to claim the CHAN title with a convincing 4-0 win after they overpowered the Super Eagles of Nigeria, who played most of the second half with just 10 men in Sunday's final. The Atlas Lions become the fourth different winner of the CHAN title, joining DR Congo, Tunisia, and Libya on the honors board. Kunle Solaja is one of Nigeria's renowned sports editor.
I envisage that Nigeria will find it very difficult to beat Morocco, but I never thought it would be a merciless beating that Nigeria will receive. Let's consider some facts. One, this is a defensive side facing an ultra-attacking side. And if you watch the first half very well, you discover that the Nigerian team was only trying to absorb pressure.
Some other Nigerian fans are not surprised the Super Eagles of Nigeria were beaten to the title by the Atlas Lions of Morocco.
Nigerian team should even have no business getting to the final, owing to where they played from the beginning. You know, I think they were very, very lucky getting a 92nd-minute goal against Angola in the quarterfinal. That is when I think they were just good enough for the quarterfinal. They shouldn't have gotten beyond that stage.
It sounded like Nigeria just got there by luck. They were just lucky to have, you know, scaling through till the final.
The 2018 CHAN tournament, which ended in Morocco on Sunday, should have taken place in Kenya, but the East African country could not get most of its venues ready, leading to CAF stripping Kenya of the hosting right. Nick Mwadwewa, president of the Kenya Football Federation, has been speaking on why Kenya lost the hosting right to the tournament.
They think we're angry with them. They think that we think they took it away. I'd say that I'm not happy the way they communicated it, and that's what I've told them, but I know the reasons why we lost it, and these are colleagues. We have to get more serious. Morocco picked this up when? In October, and no hitch delivered tournament.
In cricket news, the South African national cricket team, the Proteas, had no answer to the skills and guile of the Indian wrist spinners as they lost 9 wickets for 67 runs to succumb to a 9-wicket defeat in the second Momentum ODI at the SuperSport Park on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malle in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
And that's it for this Monday, February 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, political tensions simmer in Kenya as opposition leader Raila Odinga takes a symbolic presidential oath of office as the people's president, despite warnings from the nation's attorney general, who called the mock swearing-in of Odinga an act of treason. An in-depth look at Kenya's political future on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.